मीरांधस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नमो ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन्निति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे वांशाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीनिवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। Hare Krishna. So thank you, Devaki Nandan Prabhu, for your warm words of welcome. It is my pleasure and honor to be with all of you from New Jersey today. It's been a long time since I have been with all of you, and I'm glad that you have this festival of Krishna Katha, in which several devotees are speaking. I do hope that all of you are well and safe. It doesn't look like the coronavirus pandemic is over yet. And now I think you're also down with flooding from what I hear. So anyway, I hope you're all well and safe and continuing in your Krishna consciousness with happiness and enthusiasm. So today's topic pertains to the killing of demons by Krishna and Balaram. Now, even though the topic specifically I heard is deliverance of demons, but I'd like to speak about the killing of demons in a more general way. And of course, the deliverance will be a very significant part of that. So, you know, the killing of demons is such a prominent feature of the pastimes of the Lord in all his incarnations. So, as Lord Ramachandra, he killed not just Ravana, but so many other demons, many, many other demons, as recounted in Valmiki's Ramayana. Similarly, as Narasimhadev also, he didn't kill only Hiranyakashipu. He killed the entire demoniac army of Hiranyakashipu. So in most incarnations we see that the Lord kills demons. He also does many other things. But one of the very prominent features of his pastimes is the killing of demons. Similarly, in the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram, in the midst of all the other pastimes, the killing of demons also has a very prominent place. And why is that so? Why does killing of demons occupy such a prominent place in the killing in the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram and his other incarnations? And the answer is because that is one of the important reasons for his advent. So I'm going to talk about the different reasons, and then I'll try to elaborate on that, on each of these different reasons, right? So as we know, in Vrindavan, Krishna killed so many demons, starting with Putana, and then Shakatasura, the cart demon, Trinavarta, the whirlwind demon, Vatsasura, Bakasura, Aghasura, Dhenuka, of course, Dhenukasura and Pralambasura were killed by Balaram, and then later on Shankarchuda, Arishtasura, Keshi, and then Krishna went to Mathura, he killed Kamsa and his followers, his demoniac associates. And then further on also in Mathura, in Dwarka, in Kurukshetra, in so many other places, Krishna killed many other demons along with Balaram. So even in Krishna and Balaram's pastimes, the killing of demons occupies a very important place. So let's start talking about the reasons for Krishna and Balaram killing demons. In general, for all the incarnations killing demons, and specifically for Krishna and Balaram doing so. So the first reason is that Krishna has promised that he will descend and kill demons. So in the Bhagavad Gita, we see that Sambhavami Yuge Yuge, that I will descend in every age. For what reason? Paritranaya Sadhunam, to save the devotees, Vinashaya Cha Dushkritam, to destroy the miscreants, and Dharma Sansthapanarthaya, to establish the principles of true Dharma. So Krishna has made a promise again and again in the scriptures that he will advent and promise that he will do so. Well, I was saying that in Vrindavan, Krishna and Balaram also killed many demons. And I listed the names of the prominent demons killed by them in Vrindavan. And also moving on to Mathura, he killed Kamsa and his associates. And also further on in Dwarka Leela, he also killed many, many demons. So I was talking about the reasons for Krishna's killing of demons. And the first one I mentioned was that he makes this promise in the Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere that he will advent to destroy the demons. He also promises that he will advent for other reasons, but killing of demons is one a very important part of that promise. Now, why does he, when he says Vinashaya Cha Dushkritam, why is it that he makes such a promise? What is the reason for that? Why is it that the demons need to be killed in the first place? The first reason, of course, is that demons by their nature are very destructive, and they destroy the order and balance in society and in the universe. For example, when Hiranyaksha came, he created such a disturbance that the earth was displaced from her orbit and she fell into the Garbhodaka ocean. And then the Lord had to come as Varahadev to retrieve the earth from the ocean, the Garbhodaka ocean. I was saying that the first reason for Krishna killing the demons is that he's fulfilling his promise that he has made in the Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere also. There are other promises he makes, but this is one important promise he makes. And what is the reason for making this promise? What is the reason for his wanting to kill the demons? Number one, it's because these demons by nature are want to creating disturbances everywhere. They disturb the sense of order and balance everywhere. So therefore, the Lord has to come to destroy them so that the order can be restored. I was giving the example of Hiranyaksha, who disturbed the earth in its orbit and it fell into the Garbhodaka ocean. And the Lord had to come as Varahadev to lift the earth planet out of the Garbhodaka ocean and restore her in her original orbit. So this is the act of demons. The second reason is that when the demons come, they usually they don't follow the laws of dharma, and they create a great disturbance in dharma. Not only do they not follow, they often create their own dharmas, which are sinful, which are not proper, and they concoct. And therefore, it is necessary for the Lord to kill them so that, these false ideas of dharma and this willful violation of dharma can be stopped for the well-being of everybody. And the third reason for killing the demons is that, again, the demons are naturally inclined to harassing and killing good people, killing the devotees of the Lord. So when the demons start harassing the devotees, then naturally the Lord has to come. And in order to protect the devotees, then he kills the demons. So this is very, very important. Now, of course, protecting the devotees is actually more important than killing the demons. But because it is the demons who are harassing the devotees, so therefore Krishna comes and he kills the demons. So this is a very important part or reason for Krishna's killing demons. Even Queen Kunti in her prayers says, Vadhaya cha surat visham, that, O Krishna, some people say that one of the reasons for your advent is to kill demons. In the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami mentions that Krishna would kill demons daily in Vrindavan. And Srila Prabhupada in one place mentions that he would kill two or three demons every day before lunch. So there were that many demons. But it's only the prominent demons who are mentioned by Shukadev Goswami. So the list of demons that I mentioned from the Srimad Bhagavatam, like Putana, Shakatasura, Trinavarta, Aghasura, Bakasura, etc., are just the prominent ones. Otherwise, there are so many other demons that Krishna and Balaram killed. And another important aspect to note here is that when we speak of killing of demons, it also implies that Krishna destroys any demoniac mentality that may arise even amongst those who may not be officially classified as demons. If there is any antagonistic mentality that develops, for example, during Govardhan Leela, an antagonistic mentality developed in Indra's heart. So Krishna had to subdue that. So in this way, the pastimes of Krishna in killing demons in Vrindavan are especially sweet. The potency that is required to kill demons is not really that great when you compare the required potency with Krishna's unlimited potency. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purports that Krishna is like a covered flames of fire. So when a fire is covered, you can't really understand its true illuminative power. Sometimes a few sparks of that fire may escape the covering and may happen to fall on a dry stack of grass. And then the stack of grass immediately catches fire. Once the fire is kindled, it then grows very rapidly and burns up everything. So all it needs is a spark of that fire. So Krishna is like the entire fire. The potency of Krishna is like that huge unlimited fire. And the power that he utilizes to kill the demons is just one tiny spark of that fire. So we can understand that Krishna's killing of demons is merely an exhibition of a very, very tiny fraction of his powers. So And for Krishna, it doesn't make a difference whether he is exhibiting his childhood pastimes or whether he is in his full so-called maturity of life. At every stage, because Krishna remains the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-powerful Supreme Lord, so he's as powerful when he's one day old or 6 days old when he killed Putana as he was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra or when he was at any other point of time. So, therefore, Krishna's killing of demons is not something that Krishna has to strain himself for. It's just something that he does so easily. Another interesting fact about the killing of demons that is mentioned in Krishna book by Srila Prabhupada is that Krishna, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, actually has no business in killing demons to diminish the overload of sinful activities on the earth. I mentioned earlier that the demons do three main things which cause a disturbance. They create a disturbance in the order of the universe, they disturb and harass the devotees, and they also destroy dharma and concoct their own dharmas. So as far as doing these things is concerned, it is not Krishna's business to do that. It is Vishnu's business to do that. Vishnu is an expansion of Krishna. By Vishnu, I mean all the other avatars or the expansions of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada continues to mention therein, in the Krishna book, that Krishna, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, includes within himself every single one of his expansions. And Krishna has unlimited expansions. Some expansions are the direct expansions which are called Ansha. And there are many other expansions that are expansions of the expansions, of the expansions of the expansions and so on. They are called Kala. So the Ansha and the Kala. So all the Amshas and the Kalas, the plenary portions and the portions of the plenary portions of Krishna, they all eternally reside within Krishna who is in Vrindavan. So when Krishna descends in Vrindavan, then when the demons have to be killed, it is the Vishnu portion of Krishna, the Vishnu who is residing within Krishna, who actually kills the demons. Krishna is too busy enjoying his other blissful pastimes. So Krishna manifests the Vishnu form from within, and it is a Vishnu potency actually that kills the demons. Because when it comes to dealing with the material world, whether it's the creation, the maintenance, etc., it is the Vishnu forms of the Lord who do the needful. So this is an interesting and important point to be noted in this connection. Also, because Krishna has all these other, killing of the demons have these three purposes, we should know that actually this is, killing of demons is not the main purpose of Krishna's descent. The main purpose of Krishna's descent, as we have seen, is something else, which I will come to in a moment. I made a brief reference to it earlier, that he protects the devotees. It is more important for Krishna to protect the devotees than to kill the demons. So therefore, the killing of demons is called an anusangika karma. Anusangika means a secondary thing, a secondary act. So the killing of demons is a secondary purpose in Krishna's pastimes. It is not his principal purpose, although it is very important, but nevertheless it is not the principal purpose. So what is the real purpose then? We mentioned about protecting the devotees, but let's consider this very interesting point that is made by Srila Prabhupada in one of his purports. He says, with reference to the verse Paritranaya Sadhunam, which I just referred to earlier, that when it comes to killing the demons, material nature can do the needful. Krishna doesn't need to personally advent to kill demons. material nature is so powerful because material nature is Krishna's own personal energy. Even though she is the external energy, but still she is Krishna's energy and therefore all powerful. So who is the demon who is so powerful that he can withstand the power of Krishna's material nature? And in this day and age, we have many demons, but they're all tiny, tiny demons, small demons. All it needs is a little, you know, a natural catastrophe or something like that, and it's done. Or one little heart attack or something, and it's done. So, for killing demons, material nature can do the needful. Krishna doesn't need to personally advent. When it comes to protecting the devotees, does Krishna need to come to do that? Not really. The devotees are competent to protect themselves. How so? Because they're always chanting the holy names of the Lord. So the holy names of the Lord will protect the devotees. So Krishna has advented in the form of the holy name, and in the form of the holy name, he protects the devotees. So Krishna doesn't need to come separately just to protect the devotees. And when it comes to establishing dharma, well, the devotees do that. And that's what all of you are doing out there in the USA, in New Jersey and other places. You're all preaching and practicing Krishna consciousness, establishing real dharma everywhere. And from time immemorial, there have been so many great saintly persons, great sadhus who have appeared and they have established dharma. Also, there are many Raja Rishis, saintly kings like Yudhishthir Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, Prithu Maharaj in Vedic history, who have a very completely established dharma. So even for establishing dharma, Krishna doesn't need to come. So then all the three things for which he promises that he will advent are actually fulfilled by other things. So why does he then come? He comes for the sake of staging a dramatic performance of his pastimes, Prabhupada says. And that, of course, includes the killing of the demons. So Krishna's pastimes are like a drama. And, you know, everything in a drama is like that. No? Therefore, when we speak of somebody's behavior being very dramatic, we indicate that he's performing a drama. Yes, he's behaving like he's acting very dramatically. So it's one transcendental drama. It's an eternally ongoing drama in the spiritual world. And similarly, that same eternal drama also is transposed here in the material world. So Krishna performs all these dramatic stage of the material world when he advents here. And what is the purpose of doing that? The purpose is to attract the conditioned souls and more specifically to attract the devotees of the Lord. So, therefore we see that devotees are there in the forefront. But it's not merely to protect the devotees physically or in other ways, but it is to actually attract them more, to nourish their devotional kripa. And also there may be others who are on the fringe, who may be somewhat casually inclined, and there may be others who are even opposed, but they may get attracted perhaps by Krishna's performance of these pastimes. And because killing of demons is such an important element of the pastimes of Krishna, therefore these also serve to attract the devotees. Therefore we speak about killing of putana, and we may hear hours and hours of lectures on just killing of putana and the significance of that, the esoteric or the mysterious features associated with the killing of putana, for example. There's so many things and so many scriptures say so many things about this pastime. So therefore, all sorts of people get attracted by this dramatic exhibition of pastimes of Krishna, which includes killing of demons. So once the devotees are attracted, then naturally, Krishna becomes very pleased. Kunti Maharani, in the 8th chapter of the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, prays to Krishna. many wonderful shlokas or verses that she says. One of the verses that she says is, Bhavismin klishyamananam avidya kama karma bhihi shravana smaranarahani arhani karishyan iti kechana. She says, my dear Krishna, there are some people who say that you descend into this world to rejuvenate the principles of devotional service, including Shravana, Smaran, Kirtan, Archana, you know, all the ninefold process of bhakti as given by Prahlad. So you descend to rejuvenate this practice of devotional service for whose sake? For whose benefit? For the benefit of Klishyamananam, Bhave Asmin, those conditioned souls who are here in this material world, Bhava, and who are tormented by the sufferings of material existence, which are due to avidya, ignorance, which lead them to then have karma, wrong desires, and would then lead them, karma bhi, to perform sinful activities, which then lead to suffering. So you have come to re-establish the principles of devotional service so that these conditioned souls may be attracted to you and they may get liberated. So when the conditioned soul is attracted to Krishna, then naturally he or she gives up all these other activities and relishes the taste of Krishna consciousness. And they become devotees. Those who are devotees, if they have traces of such desires, they also get washed away by the performance of devotional service. So in this way, this is a general point that Kunti Maharani is making, that people in general and the devotees in general are attracted to devotional service in general. But there is a very special form of devotional service that is meant to attract very special type of devotees. And Krishna comes to perform his pastimes to attract such devotees as well. Who are those devotees? Those devotees who are specifically keen on relishing Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. Therefore, Shukadev Goswami says in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Anugrahaya bhaktanam manusham dehamastitaha bhajate tadrishi krida yah shrutva tatparo bhavet. He says that the Lord descends to give his mercy, anugraha, upon the devotees, the bhaktas. And for that purpose, he descends amongst the human species, appearing just like another human, manusham deham astitaha. And bhajate tadrishi krida. Krida means the pastimes. So he enjoys and performs such activities or pastimes, yaha shrutva, by whoever hears that, by hearing which, tatparo bhavet, one becomes very dedicated and devoted to Krishna. So the reference here is specifically to the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, especially the Rasalila. Because this chapter, this verse appears in that context, in the Rasa Panchabdhyaya, in the five chapters that deal with Rasalila. But of course, one could slightly broaden the import of this verse to include also other pastimes in Vrindavan, which include the killing of the demons. So therefore, the real purpose of Krishna's killing of demons is to actually give pleasure to the devotees and to attract them to him. And when Krishna's devotees hear the pastimes of him killing Aghasura, Bakasura, they are struck with wonder. It increases the love for Krishna that the devotees have in their hearts. Now the devotees who are in the mood of awe and majesty with respect to Krishna, the devotees in Mathura, Dwarka, etc., for them their love also increases, but that love is in the mood of majesty. Whereas the devotees in Vrindavan, when they see Krishna killing the demons, their love for Krishna becomes even sweeter. the sense of majesty and awe and reverence of Krishna does not become a hindrance. Rather, it is an embellishment that only adds to the sweetness of the pastimes. So therefore, the purport or the essence of the second reason that I'm mentioning here is Krishna kills demons. He descends to kill demons to attract the conditioned souls and the devotees in general, and specifically to also attract devotees who are in the mood of Vrindavan. And that goes for Balaram as well. So everything I say for Krishna will also be true for Balaram. So now we come to the third reason. Now Krishna not only wants to give pleasure to the devotees. Who else does he want to give pleasure to? Now generally in life we see that as living entities, we like giving happiness to others. But don't we seek happiness ourselves? Don't we seek pleasure for ourselves? Who amongst us doesn't like to relish a very nice meal of Krishna prasadam? Yes, so we seek pleasure for ourselves too. So we are offering Krishna delicious bhoga for his pleasure, but then we also want to enjoy that in Krishna consciousness and relish it. So just as we want to give Krishna pleasure, but we also want to get pleasure ourselves in the process of serving Krishna. So similarly, Krishna also wants to please his devotees, but he also wants some pleasure for himself. So the third reason for Krishna killing demons is that he wants to enjoy transcendental pleasure himself. So it may be asked that is Krishna some kind of a get some sadistic pleasure in killing and destroying? That's such a ghastly thing to do. To get some enjoyment by killing people. What kind of pleasure is that? So it needs to be pointed out that Krishna is forever transcendentally situated. So he is not touched by the lower or by any mode of material nature. Not even the mode of goodness. He exists in the transcendental goodness. Vishuddha Sattva. Generally, when people kill in this world, it is out of ignorance or passion. The modes of ignorance and passion. We may ascribe similar motives to Krishna because externally it appears to be the same. For example, if someone were to kill another person and tear open his chest and then pull out the intestines and garland himself with the intestines, we'll say that is ghastly because that is very much in the mode of ignorance. And that is precisely what Narasimhadev does with Hiranyakashipu. But is Lord Narasimhadev's act of killing Hiranyakashipu and then garlanding himself with the intestines of Hiranyakashipu a tamasic act in the mode of ignorance? No. It is forever transcendental. Similarly, when somebody dances with many other ladies at the same time, you know, it's an act in the mode of good, in the passion. So when Krishna performs the Rasa Leela with so many gopis, is that in the mode of passion? No, it isn't. Even though it externally may appear to be so. So Krishna is always transcendentally situated and so are the gopis. So therefore that pastime, the Rasa Leela, is forever transcendental in nature. Krishna or the gopis, neither of them are touched by the mode of passion of the material world. Similarly, when somebody sits down for studies, it's a mode of goodness. So Krishna and Balaram went to Avanti to study under Sandipani Muni. So then were they under the influence of the mode of goodness? No. They were transcendental. So similarly, the killing of demons by Krishna is always transcendental. It is never tainted by even the slightest bit influence of the modes of material nature. And because he's untainted by material nature, he doesn't have the motivations that drive people to do ghastly activities in the material world. So people, there are some serial killers, for example, who are psychologically disturbed. They may get some perverse pleasure out of serial killing and so on. But Krishna is not like that. So his pleasure is completely transcendental. And Srila Prabhupada explains that the killing of demons or the are like pleasure excursions for Krishna. So this is a beautiful phrase Prabhupada has used, pleasure excursion. You know, an excursion is like, you know, you go out somewhere for a picnic or something like that. So the killing of demons is like a pleasure excursion for Krishna. And specifically, Srila Prabhupada explains that he wants to relish the fighting spirit. You see, all of us, we sometimes like to fight. Now, let's be honest to ourselves. We all do. Sometimes. We may like to quarrel with somebody. We may like to fight. We may not like to come to blows. I mean, that's another thing. But we do like to fight with others sometimes. Even as children, even if in adulthood somehow or other we have controlled ourselves, but in childhood, we must have fought a lot with other children, with our parents, and so on. So Prabhupada says, where does that nature come from? The nature to fight. You know, even children, if you see them, even if they're not exposed to the horrible television programs of bang, 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 killing and wars and all of that, all these video games where they show how you kill the maximum number of people in the shortest time. Nowadays, that is only aggravated. But even earlier, you know, the children would play among other games where they will kill the bad person. And so even little children have this conception of fighting. So where is that coming from? So Srila Prabhupada says the tendency to fight, especially amongst those who are of a Kshatriya spirit and even in others, is there because it exists in Krishna. Otherwise, how would it come here? So the jiva is a tiny part and parcel of Krishna who has all the qualities of Krishna in very infinitesimal quantity. Some qualities of Krishna in very tiny quantity. So therefore, since Krishna has the innate urge to fight, so does the jiva. And Krishna is Rasika Raj, Rasika Shekhar, Akhila Rasamrita Murti, in the words of Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion. So he relishes all varieties of transcendental rasa, mellows. There are 5 primary rasas and there are 7 secondary rasas. So one of the secondary rasas is Vira Rasa, the rasa of chivalry. It doesn't exist all the time. So Krishna doesn't kill demons all the time when he advents here. He kills Putana, then he does other things, and then he kills Shakatasura, then he does other things, then he kills Trinavarta, then he does other things like that. So the killing of demons intersperses or punctuates so many other pastimes that he does. So these are occasional pastimes that are done here. And that is because Krishna wants to somehow or the other taste the rasa of chivalry. He wants to have the good fight. He likes fighting too sometimes. Yeah, and who does he fight with? You know, this is a problem. In the spiritual world, everybody is a devotee. So there's no demons in the spiritual world. I mean, in reality, there may be an impression or some kind of a rumor or something like that, just to enhance the taste of the pastimes, to increase the excitement of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, in the spiritual world. But actually speaking, Vrindavan is only, the Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world is only meant for devotees, pure devotees. Even if we have the slightest trace of impurity, we cannot enter into the spiritual world. So how can there be demoniac people who are very envious of Krishna? So then there is a contradiction here. So therefore, what Krishna does is, he appears in the material world and performs those activities which he likes to do, but which are difficult to do in the spiritual world, or shall we say are incompatible with the spiritual world in some way, are contradictory. So he does those pastimes here. And sometimes he engages his devotees to do that, because who can be powerful enough to fight with Krishna after all? So therefore he engages Jay and Vijay, his doorkeepers in Vaikuntha, to become demons. And then he fights with them and fights the good fight and relishes it. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of a king who keeps some professional wrestlers in his employ. And then he mock wrestles with them. Well, he actually wrestles, of course, but the wrestlers make sure that they don't injure the king, because the king is a human being. So they don't expend all their energy. But when Krishna fights, you know, as I mentioned earlier, he expends only a very, very, very tiny part of his power. And the demons exert every ounce of their energy. But they are always defeated. So Krishna enjoys this vir rasa, this pastime of relishing the mood of chivalry. So therefore he comes to relish. The third reason for Krishna descending for killing demons is that he wants to give pleasure to himself, and specifically the taste of the vir rasa, or the transcendental mellow of chivalry. And now we come to the fourth reason. The fourth reason is that because Krishna is all good, he can never cause harm to anyone. Therefore, he comes to do good to the demons as well, the demons whom he kills. Now, with reference to the earlier point I mentioned, that generally when people kill other people, those other people are harmed. But when Krishna kills somebody, that person is not harmed. That person actually becomes tremendously benefited, unlimitedly benefited. Krishna delivers the demons. So therefore, one reason for Krishna killing the demons is that he wants to do good to them by delivering them. At the very least, in his different incarnations, he sends them to a higher destination within the material world. And Krishna's killing, therefore, is not driven by envy or hatred and so on, as we find in the material world, but it is driven by love and mercy. So when Krishna kills a demon, it may appear that he's angry and he wants to take revenge or whatever. He wants to punish somebody for having tortured a devotee, etc. But actually, he wants to do good to that devotee. Automatically, that demon. So the demon also gets liberated. Now, an interesting feature of this is that both the demons as well as the devotees get benefited when they come in contact with Krishna. Basically, anyone who comes in contact with Krishna is benefited. What to speak of a devotee? Even a demon is benefited. Both get the same destination, in the sense that the devotees, the pure devotees of the Lord, and the demons who were killed by Krishna, both attain to the spiritual world. Of course, they attain to different parts of the spiritual world. In the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the king, the kingdom and the king's palace. Now, many people live in the kingdom, but very few people are allowed entrance into the king's palace. And even those who are within the king's palace, very few amongst them are allowed entrance into the king's personal rooms. Yes? So let's take this analogy for the spiritual world. Let's consider the spiritual world to be like the kingdom. And the kingdom is vast. So there are some who may get entrance, but they don't have a home there. They may just wander around living under a tree or living here or there, and they're not able to interact with anyone. So they are like the demons who are killed by the Supreme Lord and who actually merge into the impersonal Brahman. They retain their individuality, but they remain there. They don't have a personal relationship with Krishna or the devotees. So these individuals who may enter into the kingdom, they're just there. But they don't get any opportunity to have personal interactions with the king. There are others who probably live, who are related to the king. And the king has brothers and cousins and so on. And they also have their palaces, you know. And so these, and you can enter into those palaces. So if you're in the mood of Vaikuntha, then you can go into the palaces of the king's brother or something, who's as good as the king, actually speaking. And then you can live, you can be there, you can relish, you know, your interactions with that prince or the princess or whatever. So that is like the mood of Vaikuntha, where the devotees attain to the spiritual planets, the Vaikuntha lokas, not the impersonal Brahmajyoti that the demons get. But they get to associate with the form of the Lord who is who rather draws reverence and majesty. There is a sense of majesty and awe and reverence about him. So the devotees of the Lord in the Vaikuntha lokas, they cannot get very intimate with the Lord. They maintain some distance, although they are pure devotees. And there is a lot of happiness there. There's a lot of taste there. But still there is some restriction, because there is always that conception that this is the king. He is the Lord. So some distance there. So that is like in other places, in all the Vaikuntha lokas. And then you come to the king's palace, which is like Krishna Loka. And Krishna Loka has, you know, Dwarka, it has Mathura, and it has Vrindavan. So you may come to a certain part of the king's palace, which is where the public can come, like the king's court. Many ministers are there, many people come in to make petitions and all that. So Dwarka and Mathura are like that. You get to see the king, you get to interact with him, and you are inside the king's personal palace, but in that section of the palace where there is still some formality. Because the king is still in that courtroom there. And those devotees who are in the mood of Vrindavan are like those who enter into the king's inner chambers. Maybe his parents and those who serve him as elders and the friends of the king, if the king is a child. You know, if the king is, you know, young, then his friends will come in and his queens will come in and so on. And those who serve the queens and those who serve the king personally will also be there. That's like Vrindavan. So in this way, although the demons and devotees all are destined, demons killed by Krishna, I mean, are all destined for the spiritual world, but within the spiritual world, they have different destination. So when we speak of the deliverance of the demons, we must see that there is a distinction to be made between the specific destinations that they attain and the destinations that the devotees attain. And as we have seen, even amongst the devotees, there is a distinction between the destinations they attain in the courtrooms, in the inner chambers, and so on. And even in the inner chambers, there are those who are more intimate, like the gopis for Krishna, and then the Nandi Maharaj and Yashoda for Krishna. Yes, then the cowherd boys, then the servants of Krishna, all at differing degrees of intimacy to Krishna. So in this way, we have an analogy that's a very beautiful analogy of the king, of the kingdom, the king's palace, the king, and so on. So what place do the demons have? The demons can at the most get to the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. Yes? Now, I'll come to Vrindavan a little later, the demons that Krishna kills in Vrindavan. But generally, the demons that Krishna kills, they attain the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. So they're also delivered. This is an important point. Now, another aspect of the deliverance of the demons is when we distinguish Krishna from his Vishnu form. Krishna killing the demons and Vishnu killing the demons. Is there a difference? Yes, there is a difference. You see, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and also in the Nectar of Devotion, we read about Krishna's having 64 transcendental qualities in completeness and perfection. Of these 64 qualities, Lord Vishnu or Lord Narayan has 60. These 60 exist in completeness and perfection in Lord Narayan also. However, not to the same degree of sweetness as Krishna. And amongst these 60 qualities, there are 5 qualities which do not exist even in great personalities like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma. So one of these extra 5 qualities that Lord Narayan has, which even Lord Shiva does not have, is Hatari Gatidayakaha. Hatari, Hatha means to kill, Ari means enemy. Gati means a higher destination, Dayakaha means one who gives. So Lord Vishnu or Lord Narayan is one who gives a higher destination to the demons he kills. Now naturally, because Lord Narayan's, the qualities of Lord Narayan are also included within Krishna, therefore when Krishna kills the demon, he also gives them a higher destination. But what is the difference between the higher destination that Krishna gives after killing the demons and when Vishnu kills, or any other form or expansion of Krishna, like Narasimhadev or Ram or so on? An insignificant difference. It is only when Krishna kills the demons that they actually get liberated. When the other forms of the Lord kill the demons, then they get a higher destination. Not necessarily liberation. And Srila Prabhupada has given some nice purports and all that with this regard, but we don't have the time to discuss all that. But suffice it to say here that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and he's also cited by Srila Prabhupada, he gives the examples of some demons who were killed by the avatars of Krishna, but they did not attain liberation. The first name that comes to mind is Kalanemi. Kalanemi was a demon who was killed by Vishnu. And he took birth again as Kamsa. So he was reborn. Even though he was killed by Vishnu. Similarly, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu were killed by Varahadeva and Narasimhadeva respectively. They took birth again. They appeared in Treta Yuga. Ravana and Kumbhakarna, they were killed by Raman and Lakshman, Lord Ramachandra, but they did not attain liberation. They were reborn as Shishupal and Dantavakra. But when Krishna killed Shishupal and Dantavakra, they were delivered. So there are numerous examples like this that are given. So this is a very important point. That it is only Krishna who can give liberation to the demons he kills. Other avatars give them a higher destination at the most. They may give them Swargaloka, they may give them some other higher planet, etc. So even the liberation of merging into the impersonal Brahman can be given only by Krishna. And then again, when it is Krishna who kills the demons, there is a distinction. When Krishna kills in Vrindavan, then he may give some of them access to Vrindavan. Like when he killed Putana, she got the destination that is of a nurse, similar to that of a mother, not exactly, but similar to that of a mother. And she entered a realm of Goloka Vrindavan that is predominated by some degree of majesty and awe. Not Dwarka, but a portion of Goloka. Otherwise, Goloka is predominated by the sweet mood of service. But that part of Goloka, which has some aspect of awe, Putana became a nurse in that part. But she got Goloka Vrindavan. Similarly, Kamsa too, many of these demons who were killed by Krishna attained Sarupya Mukti or something like that. They got higher destinations in Goloka. And in Mathura and Dwarka, they got either Mathura or Dwarka, or they got the Vaikuntha Lokas when they were killed by Krishna. An interesting thing that Srila Prabhupada says is that even if Krishna, if the demons are killed in Krishna's presence and they see Krishna and Krishna sees them, then they are also delivered. So Krishna used his instruments like Arjuna and Bhima to kill many of the people, soldiers in the battle of Kurukshetra. And those were also delivered because they were in the presence of Krishna. And Prabhupada mentions here that those who recognize Krishna as a Supreme Personality of Godhead, they attain to the Vaikuntha Lokas. Those who thought of Krishna merely as a powerful person attain to the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. So very, very interesting details given here. So in this way we see that Krishna's killing of the demons is actually of good to them in various ways. It's a big topic and there are many things to discuss in this, but I'll quickly move on to the other two reasons and I'll discuss them very briefly. Another reason that Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur mentions for Krishna killing the demons is that there is some utility for the sadhakas. By sadhakas, we mean those who are practicing devotees whose hearts are not totally cleansed of material contamination. So, Bhaktivinod Thakur says that each of these demons represents a particular anartha or an unwanted item in the heart. For example, Putana represents the pseudo guru who preaches sense gratification or who preaches liberation or both. So therefore, Putana, you know, represents that kind of a deviant mentality. Shakatasura, the cart demon, represents, bad habits accumulated in this life and the previous life. It represents lethargy, dullness. So Vatsasura represents, represents a type of greed. And Bakasura represents duplicity, deviousness, deceptiveness, etc. So when we hear about the killing of the demons very sincerely and faithfully, then we get delivered from these wrong mentalities that may exist within us. So this is an opportunity for us to actually make advancement in our Krishna consciousness. So the deliverance of the demons also fortuitously works out to be an occasion for our deliverance also, because when we hear about them, then we get purified. And one last point briefly, because we're running out of time. Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita, ye yatha mam prapadyante tams tathaiva bhajamyaham. As people approach me, I reciprocate accordingly. So when someone approaches Krishna in a devotional mood, Krishna naturally reciprocates accordingly. Krishna loves all the living entities, but all living entities don't love Krishna. So those living entities in the material world who want to love Krishna, Krishna amply reciprocates, more than proportionately, and delivers that jiva by giving that jiva pure love of Krishna, pure love of Godhead. And for those who are averse to Krishna, who want to be atheistic, then Krishna says, all right, if that's what you want, then so be it. So I will strengthen the mood of atheism or hostility to me in your heart, and I'll make you very strongly hostile to me, if that's what you want. And if you are so hostile to the degree that you want to kill me, you want to fight with me, okay, so be it. Then I'll give you the opportunity to become a demon. And then I will kill you and I will deliver you like that. Because I'm all merciful, I will deliver you either way, this way or that way. So in this way, Krishna will kill that demon. But of course, one has to be a very, very exceptionally powerful demon, or one's demoniac nature has to be so strong in order to become a demon that's important enough to be killed by Krishna. It's much easier to try to be a pure devotee. So we don't have to worry about, think, oh, it sounds easier for us to become a demon killed by Krishna and then we go to the spiritual world. No, it's much easier to become a pure devotee. And also, Parikshit Maharaj asks Shukadev Goswami that it appears that Krishna is being partial to the demigods. Why does he kill the demons and protect the demigods? It sounds like partiality. What does he stand to gain by this? Why does he do something that looks blatantly partial? And Shukadev Goswami mentions to him that Krishna is always transcendentally situated. Partiality exists for those who are within the clutches of the three modes of material nature. And Krishna is driven only by love. And therefore, everything that Krishna does is driven by that motive. Actually, it is not Krishna. It is because of the time factor that the demons are killed. When the modes of nature act and react in certain ways, they combine together in certain ways, and the time factor interacts with the three modes and creates circumstances that kill the demons. So it is not Krishna who is to be blamed for that. And anyway, Krishna is not driven by hatred and anger and so on. So Krishna is not being partial. And in any case, because the demons want to be inimical to Krishna, so Krishna says, all right, if you want to be inimical to me, then I will also be inimical to you. So therefore, Krishna cannot be blamed for killing the asuras, for the demons. Yes? So he does so because it is an act of reciprocation with those who want to deal with him in that fashion. So, okay, we've discussed the topic at length. Now I think we'll leave the floor open for questions. Is that okay, Devakinandan Prabhu? I think.
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay.
Thank you so much. There is, Maharaj, one question in the chat. Why Sarat Bihari Prabhu? How do we make youngsters understand these stories where demons in animal form and they talk? The question, how come these animals talk and stuff? How do we handle this?
Well, children read fairy tales all the time where animals talk, animals do everything, right? So it's not unusual. But the difference is that this is not an imaginary fairy tale. That's the only difference. And the idea here is that many of these demons, they have assumed animal forms because they have yogic powers, as described by Shukadev Goswami in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, that because they are powerful yogis, so they can assume various forms. So therefore, one demon assumed the form of an ass. He was known as Dhenukasura. They can assume the form at will because they have such yogic powers. So Putana is also described as a Kama Rupini, she could take on any form that she desired. So even though her real form was that she was very ugly, she could appear like a very beautiful young lady that entered into the house of Mother Yashoda. So these demons can assume the form of an ass, the form of a horse, the form of a bull, yes, a form of a snake, because that's in keeping with their particular mood of that demon. So they are actually demons who have assumed these forms. Okay?
Thank you very much, Maharaj. Our dear Dishwara Lal Prabhu has a question.
Yes. Yes. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Dandavat Pranam.
Hare Krishna, Yashoda Dulal Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
So much insight that, you know, we've heard this topic before, but still we got new insights. Thank you. So I had a question. You know, you said, and it's also, I've heard it before, our tendency to fight comes from Krishna. But someone might hear this question, or hear this statement and say, well, we see human beings that veer off into extreme cruelty, like, you know, the despots of the world, like the Hitlers and the Stalins and whatever. So should we understand that that comes from Krishna too, or is that a misuse of the human being's free will? How do we answer that question?
Yes, it's a misapplication of the tendencies that we have. Although we have the same tendencies as Krishna, but because we are conditioned, these tendencies are pervertedly reflected in a way that is harmful to us and to others. Therefore, the first thing to do is to change that perverted tendency, that perverted nature. So when we become favorable to Krishna, and then we become his devotees, then those same tendencies can be utilized in a wholesome fashion. They can be utilized in a way that is productive and gainful, and that will help in Krishna consciousness, and that will be for the welfare of the world. So therefore, the Kshatriya kings, for example, they were supposed to utilize their fighting propensity to protect dharma, to protect the virtuous and the innocent and the weak, and to destroy the miscreants. But it could well be that some king will misuse his power, like King Vena did, or many other kings even in recent history have done. So then they stand punished by the arrangement of Krishna. So the tendencies have to be utilized properly. The proper utilization or application of those tendencies comes when we become devotees of Krishna. If you're not devotees of Krishna, there will be a very strong tendency to a possibility of us misusing it. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Neil Mataji, your question, please. You can turn your video down also, that would be good.
Yeah, this is not so appropriate right now. Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you, Maharaj, for class. Yeah, a question that I had, also in connection with chivalry, Leela's, is how is it that Krishna is able to enjoy fighting with living entities, knowing that he will always win?
Interesting. He doesn't know always that he will win. The yoga maya, the Leela Shakti is such that it creates excitement. And even the demigods, they're hiding behind the clouds, wringing their hands, and doing the heavenly equivalent of biting their nails, whatever it is they may be doing. Yeah, that, oh, the now Hiranyakashipu is becoming very powerful, he is attacking the Lord. So sometimes the Leela Shakti of the Lord covers the Lord so that he can relish the pastimes more. But even if the Lord, even when the Lord knows that he is going to win, he still enjoys the good fight. Because there's a lot of fighting that goes on, and he allows that fighting to go on for quite a while. So when Lord Ram, he fights ferociously, because remember, he's in the human form of life. He appears in the human society. So he acts like a human, and he strains himself Like Lord Ram had to strain himself in the battle. Krishna also fights ferociously when he was killing demons like Dantavakra and so on and so forth. Of course, in Kurukshetra, he didn't fight. So Krishna, even when he knows, he just relishes that. Just like when a boxer, a world-class boxer, the champion, gold medalist and so on, enters into the boxing ring, he may know that he's going to win. But he relishes that prospect, yeah, I'm going to win. Yes? And he may declare to everybody, I am the greatest. And I'm going to defeat this person. And the other person says the same thing also. So it's like that. That's the spirit. So Krishna relishes that. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj. If I may, I just had one last question.
Yes.
Can I go ahead?
Yes, please.
Yeah, you remember when you were talking about the fact that both Krishna and we, jivas, like to enjoy, you know, Krishna enjoyment to his devotees, but he also likes his own personal enjoyment. And in that context, you were saying that we could relate to that because, you know, when we give food to Krishna, we also like to enjoy, you know, prasadam or whatever. But when you were, you remember this context I'm referring to?
Yes, yes.
So when you were speaking like this, it was almost sounding a little bit like, you know, in the process of giving Krishna enjoyment, we also like some enjoyment for ourselves. But my understanding is that, you know, I don't know if you were referring to conditioned souls or not, but as far as pure devotees are concerned, my conception is that their enjoyment is exclusively Krishna's enjoyment without any consideration at all for their own personal enjoyment, even when it comes to enjoying Krishna's remnant. Not a hint of personal enjoyment enters into their consciousness. So when you were speaking, I wasn't clear all of a sudden if you would agree with that.
Yes, that's a very thoughtful question. I'll talk about two cases. One for practicing devotees like us, and the second for associates of Krishna. For practicing devotees like us, yes, it is definitely an ideal that we aspire to come to the platform where we don't consider our happiness, our pleasure at all. And that's how we define Krishna consciousness, that it is meant exclusively for the service of Krishna. However, practically, isn't it, when we want to eat pizza, we cook and offer to Krishna and then we eat, right? It's not that Krishna has appeared in a dream to us and told us that, look, I want pizza, that will please me very much, so you offer me pizza. Because I want to eat pizza, but I'm doing it in a Krishna conscious way, so I procure or cook a pizza, then I offer to Krishna, but my intention is I want it. I want a pizza, but I'm at least decent enough that before I eat, I make sure Krishna eats it, right? So realistically,
yes,
speaking, in our daily activities, that is precisely the mentality in the background. So the principle, however, is that tomorrow, if we have to sacrifice that pizza for something else, the devotee is willing to do that. You know, so if we are told that for Krishna's service, you have to give up your pizza, don't take it, the devotee will say, all right, that's fine. So that is where the selfless thing comes in, right? Even at a practical day-to-day level for practicing devotees like us. So we are willing to do many things, sacrificing our own pleasure and our convenience for Krishna's pleasure. So we do that. Yet sometimes, not sometimes, every day. We think of what we want and we just connect it to Krishna and then we do it. Now coming to the eternal associates of Krishna. Yes, like the gopis, you know the famous story of Krishna having a headache and Krishna saying that only the dust of the feet of my devotees will cure my headache, and everybody refuses. And when Narad Muni goes to the gopis, they give him buckets and buckets of the dust. And despite Narad Muni's warning that, you know, if you give your lotus, the dust of your feet to Krishna's head, you can go to hell. And the gopis are willing for that. They say, even if by our going to hell, Krishna can be relieved of even one moment of the headache, our life will be successful. So that is the topmost platform of utter selflessness. And it is because of this spirit that the gopis are what they are. So their love is indeed selfish. Selfless, I beg your pardon. At the same time, on the transcendental platform, Krishna likes it when the devotees express their desires. Krishna, after all, likes to fulfill the desires of his devotees. He loves it. And on that platform of pure love in Vrindavan, there is a very frank exchange of desires, but ultimately the devotees will do whatever Krishna wants. For example, in the killing of Dhenukasura pastime, with the cowherd boys approach Krishna and Balaram. They say, Krishna and Balaram, we are very hungry now. You know, and we are smelling these delicious palm fruits, you know, which are in the forest of Talavan, not far from here. And see, the fragrance of the fruits is wafting here with the breeze. And we really want to eat those fruits. But this demon called Dhenukasura with his associates is guarding that place and not allowing anyone else to eat those fruits. So, of course, there were other reasons for the cowherd boys saying all this. They wanted Krishna and Balaram to exhibit their glorious pastimes so that everyone could glorify that. And they wanted these demonic people who were creating a disturbance to be killed. But they also wanted to eat the fruits themselves. Krishna, we also want to eat those fruits, the delicious fruits. Please give us those fruits. So Krishna and Balaram were very happy to fulfill the desires of their dear cowherd boyfriends. So even in Goloka Vrindavan, we find that whilst there is that mood of utter selflessness, whatever Krishna wants, but Krishna likes it when the devotees express their desires. And because we are not stones after all, and in Goloka Vrindavan, it's just total pleasure, total happiness. There is no restraint in Goloka Vrindavan. Anything you want, you can ask for. Prabhupada says, the wish-fulfilling trees of Vrindavan, you just stand there, you want a mango from an apple tree, you'll get a mango. So it's not that the devotees don't have desires, because they have become pure devotees. But those desires are always in tune with Krishna's pleasure, never opposed to it. And if for Krishna's pleasure they have to give up any form of personal pleasure, they're more than happy to do that. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, Maharaj. Okay. Yes. So even when those supremely selfless, not supreme, but the selfless Catholic boys, when they express the desire for fruit, in a way it's really still Krishna's desire, because they wouldn't have been pleased by their having that desire. So it seemed like no matter what the desire, even when it seems like a personal desire, it always comes at the root is always Krishna's pleasure.
Well, yes, you see, the living entities, whether they're jivas or ontologically, whether they're in some other category, all have desire. You cannot take away desire from consciousness. So, therefore, all the devotees of Krishna also have desires. And it is for the sake of fulfilling in a completely wholesome way all the desires of the devotees that Krishna actually expands himself and engages in pastimes with his devotees. After all, we are not insentient beings. We are conscious living entities, and desire is a very intrinsic quality of consciousness. So it is not that the cowherd boys desired to eat those palm fruits only because Krishna may have wanted them to desire. They also had their own desire. They wanted to eat those palm fruits. At the same time, at another level, at a philosophical level, we know that at the root, ultimate root of everything is Krishna. You know, the purpose of everything existing is pleasure, ananda. And Krishna expands himself to all the living entities so that he can exchange a relationship or pleasure or rasa with all of them. And there is no meaning to exchanging rasa and giving minute independence to the living entities if they don't have the freedom to desire and ask for what they want. So therefore, in Goloka Vrindavan, in the spiritual world, there is complete freedom for desire within that framework of love and wanting to please Krishna. The devotees in the spiritual world don't desire anything that is opposed to Krishna consciousness. So I hope that clarifies it further.
Okay, Maharaj. I mean, I do have to meditate a little bit more to reconcile, you know, the devotees having personal desire with their mood of selflessness. You know, I understand that, you know, they don't have any desire that would conflict with what Krishna desires, but just the fact that they do have their independent desire.
Without that desire, there is no meaning to life. There is no meaning to consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Otherwise, we would just be dead matter.
Yeah.
But the point is that these desires are never displeasing to Krishna. They're never opposed to Krishna consciousness. That's the point.
Okay, Maharaj.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, one last question. I believe it's in the chat by Dev Smith Prabhu. Hare Krishna Maharaj, how did Jai Vijay again take birth at Jagai Madai, even after Krishna killed them? Did they not get liberated, or did they again come out of the free will just to participate in Mahaprabhu's pastime?
Yes, good question. The birth of Jagai and Madai is a special appearance. It's a special appearance. It's not a routine thing. It's a special appearance because Jai and Vijay want to participate in Mahaprabhu's Leela. Just as Brahma comes, he wants to participate. Many of the leading personalities of the universe want to participate. Even Krishna's associates in Vrindavan want to participate in Gaur Leela, so they come in and participate there. So Jai and Vijay went back to the spiritual world, to their original positions as doorkeepers of Vaikuntha. But then came Mahaprabhu's advent, and they said, oh, we also want to participate. So then they came back in a special appearance as Jagai and Madhai. Okay? Yes. All right, so I think it's time, isn't it?
Yes, Maharaj, thank you so much for your special appearance also for our new Jersey devotees on this wonderful occasion. Our dear Mother Pati Prabhu, would you like to pay your gratitude?
Thank you, Maharaj, for this wonderful class, profound with all the reasons and analogy and explanation. With so much heartening, fulfilled our heart with gratitude for your wonderful association in the Krishna Katha. Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Thank you, Madhupati Prabhu. I hope all of you are keeping well.
Yes, Maharaj, by mercy so far, keeping well.
And your activities in the center are going on, I'm sure, flourishing, and all the devotees are blissful.
we had a nice, wonderful Janmashtami and Prabhupada appearance day celebration. Now gearing up for Adashtami celebration.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. Jai. So I'm very happy to see all of you and thankful I got a chance to serve all of you today. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.